The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, and for the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Our State magazine. Today's reading of Our State is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974, and underwriting this podcast for over 10 years. Thank you, Carter Glass. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. And now we return to the August 2021 edition of Our State magazine, celebrating North Carolina. Its issue theme this month is Proud of the Peanut, and we read all about the peanut last month. And the sub-theme is From North Carolina to Everywhere, and that's what we are going to hit up today. A place in history. The National Register of Historic Places has documented some 95,000 structures, sites, and districts across the country. In North Carolina, around 2,900 properties from churches and cotton mills to farms, homes, and schools have earned this designation. Now these special spots represent our state's history. Representing our state's history are known nationwide. I assure you I'm not covering all 2,900 of them. Here we have two pictures. On the left, it is a very large yellow dome in a shape that we recognize as the shell on the Shell sign for Shell gas stations. And there are indeed two pumps, one on either side of the Shell. One is yellow and the other one is red, and it has the Shell logo at the top of the pump. Now, these are those old-fashioned pumps where you saw the gas bubbling up in tubes through the top. It doesn't say anything about that, but on the right-hand side, well, maybe it does make a little reference to it. It says, the American Tobacco Campus in Durham, on this page, and the 1930s Shell service station in Winston-Salem, that I just mentioned, are enduring landmarks in their cities. Now, the Lucky Strike water tower is very famous, of course. I guess it's pretty much the tallest thing, There's probably, I see a skyscraper in the background, and that's probably taller. But the Lucky Strike water tower, and behind it, the Lucky Strike smokestack, will be there as long as nature will allow them to be, I'm sure, as landmarks of the city of Durham. And they are photographed here against a beautiful blue sky. How about locomotive number 12? How many of you recognize what that means? It's the Tweetsie Railroad in Blowing Rock, built in 1917. Locomotive number 12, affectionately known as Tweetsie for the sharp tweet, tweet of its whistle, was manufactured in 1917. That's 104 years ago. And is the only surviving steam locomotive of the East Tennessee and Western North Carolina Railroad. Tweetsie is a narrow-gauge locomotive that runs on a 36-inch wide track, which allows the train to better maneuver the sharp turns and steep grades of the mountainous terrain where it once ferried passengers and cargo between Boone and Johnson City, Tennessee. Narrow it may be, but diminutive it is not. With its tender, this engine weighs in at a whopping 165,000 pounds. Locomotive number 12 is now the main attraction of the Tweetsie Railroad theme park, which brings a taste of the Wild West to Blowing Rock. It's pictured here, coming over a trestle on a little bit of valley. And the steam is pouring out of the blue engine, and then the coal tender is right behind it. It is also blue. Then we have a couple of red passenger cars. Of course, they're open on the side. I don't think there's any windows that you can even pull up on it. And then a blue one, and then a yellow one, and then another red one. Fun place. Balsam Mountain Inn in Balsam. Built in 1908, one of Western North Carolina's largest inns, with three stories and originally 105 rooms, sits atop a scenic ridge in Jackson County. Completed in 1908, The Colonial Revival Style Inn has a rich history that's linked to the increase of tourists and entrepreneurs after the extension of the railway in the late 19th and early 20th centuries. The inn's size and characteristics, like the wide double-tiered front porch overlooking the crossroads and the Appalachian Mountains, were specifically designed to accommodate Victorian tourists traveling on the Southern Railway from Waynesville to Sylva. The building has seen only minor alterations over its many years. And what we have here is no picture at all. I would see a picture on the page, but it's not the picture of the Balsam Mountain Inn. The picture is of the Hugh Chatham Memorial Hospital in Elkin, built in 1931, and it's a picture that's on a postcard. Not a new postcard, but an old postcard, but nevertheless in good conditions, showing what looks to be a red brick structure with white windows with lots of individual panes on it, and a vent pipe of some sort on the rooftop. Until its disassociation with the Methodist Church in 1967, Hugh Chatham Memorial never turned away a patient for inability to afford services. Designed by renowned Winston-Salem architect Harold Macklin, the building is Elkin's oldest non-domestic structure built in the Colonial Revival style. How about the Linville Historic District? In Linville, established in 1883. Much of the architecture in this community uses a localized style of chestnut bark shingles that originated with the New York architect Henry Bacon, who also designed the Lincoln Memorial. Although Bacon's work in Linville dates between 1895 and 1910, the use of chestnut bark shingles remained prevalent in the area until World War II, by which time a widespread blight had destroyed mature chestnut trees throughout the United States. And I'm trying to see if this is the picture of it. It says All Saints Episcopal Church is one of two remaining structures in Linville designed by architect Henry Bacon and displaying his signature chestnut bark shingles. It really looks as if somebody took a tree and cut off the bark in, well, for what we see here, maybe a 2 foot, 1.5 to 2 foot long section, and then flattened it and put it on the wall. And it's not the tiny little knobs of bark that are typical, but rather almost as if there's a whole bunch of vertical sticks making up the outside, because they're all rippled, and they're all rippled vertically, and they're all just a little bit different from the one below. The Todd Historic District in Todd, incorporated in 1915, was once a thriving town roaring with the sound of logging trains. It's now a quiet mountain retreat where visitors enjoy fishing, paddle sports, and cycling. The town's heyday came in the early 1900s alongside the timber boom. But by 1934, most of the surrounding mountains had been stripped of hardwoods, and the railroad company was losing money running the extra 20 miles of track to Todd. During the Great Depression, the tracks were removed, and commerce practically vanished in a few short years. The Todd General Store, formerly Cook Brothers Mercantile, was the only business to survive the bust before burning down earlier this year. The Loray Mill Historic District is in Gastonia, and it was built in 1901. Between 1890 and the early 1920s, tens of thousands of families migrated to Gaston County to work in textile mills. The largest of these, Loray Mill, opened in 1902 and propelled the area to fame as an international textile hub. But declining profits in the late 1920s caused the mill to cut its labor force by more than a third without decreasing production rates. Meanwhile, wages were still low, hours were longer, and production picked up speed, all of which culminated in a strike. In April 1929, the governor deployed the National Guard to evict the strikers from the mill village, and on June 7, 1929, police were called to the tent village where some of the strikers had taken up residence. Shots were exchanged, and Chief Orville Elderholt was killed. The resulting murder trial drew international attention. In 1935, the mill was sold, and in 1933, the plant closed its doors. Here's an aerial photo here of the old mill, black and white photo. American Tobacco Company manufacturing plant in Durham, built in the 1870s through the 1950s. This property embodies the power and success of the American Tobacco Company Trust, which controlled 89% of the country's cigarette market in the late 19th century. The brick warehouses and factories with their slow-burn mill construction and medieval decorations reflect an important landmark for Durham's tobacco industry, the state's primary industry and biggest financial driver in the 20th century. This monument to tobacco history includes the oldest tobacco factory in the city and shows the phases of growth of not only the company, but also industrial architecture from the 1870s to the 1950s. Restaurants, event spaces, and other businesses now occupy the buildings. There's a picture of some folks here on a checkerboard type square, and there are, there's little metal platforms which have an arrow at the top and the bottom. It looks like a chessboard, but all of these figures, which are about 2 feet tall and sit on the squares, seem to be exactly the same. So I'm not sure what's going on there. And we see the metal structures connecting the buildings in the background and all of the brick two-level construction. Old East Chapel Hill opened in 1795. The Old East Dormitory at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill holds the distinction of being the oldest state university building in the nation. Since the ceremonial cornerstone was laid in 1793, the dormitory has been in near constant use for more than two centuries, housing not only dorm rooms but also classrooms, offices, and even the university library from 1853 to 1869. Thousands have resided in Old East throughout the years, including President James K. Polk. Captain John S. Pope Farm in Cedar Grove, circa 1870. One of the best-preserved rural complexes in Orange County, the farm sits on part of what was once an even larger farm owned by John Alphonse McDade. The 73-acre property represents the history of tobacco farming and the economic role that its cultivation played in the area. The farm includes one of the largest collections of agricultural outbuildings in Orange County, including a corn crib, a log building, and woodsheds. The two-story house is one of the most intact examples of the rural style that was found in this part of North Carolina in the mid to late 19th century. The farm remains in operation by the Pope family. The Boyette Slave House in Kenley was built 1800 to 1852. The most intact stick and mud chimney in the state stands among the remains of a structure in Johnson County that the Boyette family used to house enslaved people. This relic can be found unaltered in the middle of a cultivated field visible from what was once the main farmhouse. The one-room log house was constructed using hewn planks in the mid-19th century. After the Civil War, the house is believed to have been used as a school. Horn Creek Farm in Pinnacle, built 1846 to 1930. At the time of Thomas Hauser's death in 1911, his family's 450-acre farm was one of the largest and most prosperous in southeastern Surrey County. The property was eventually divided, and the house and the 20 surrounding acres were sold in 1970, becoming part of the Yadkin River section of Pilot Mountain State Park. In 1985, the North Carolina General Assembly sought to create an agricultural museum, and the Hauser Farm was selected as a prime example of agrarian life from the late 19th through the early 20th centuries. Today, visitors can view the house, barn, smokehouse, fruit house, tobacco barn, corn crib, and family cemetery. Winston-Salem, or rather the Salem Tavern in Winston-Salem, it was built in 1784. The story of Winston-Salem's early history cannot be told without mentioning Salem Tavern, which was built in 1772 and rebuilt in 1784 following a fire. For the Moravians who founded Salem, the tavern was an integral part of their plan to establish the town as a commercial center for the North Carolina backcountry. The tavern served as a place of refreshment for visitors to Salem, including President George Washington during his southern tour in 1791, who were treated to fine accommodations, quality food, and honest dealings. Over time, the tavern became a primary point of contact between Moravians and the outside world, undoubtedly contributing to fundamental transformations in the town of Salem, which would later merge with neighboring Winston, and, of course, became Winston-Salem. J.S. Dorton Arena in Raleigh, built in 1852. The completion of the arena at the North Carolina State Fair Complex was a successful experiment in concrete parabolic construction that inspired many imitations around the world. If you're familiar with this, it's a little hard to describe, but I guess it's the intersection of two very long concrete circles come up from the ground, go way up to the top of the opposite side, and swoop back down on the other side. And then there's another one that's crossed to that, and then the arena goes up to a peak on each side and is rounded, of course. Blandwood Mansion is in Greensboro, and it was completed in 1846. Designed by Alexander Jackson Davis, one of the mid-19th century's most popular architects, Blandwood is America's earliest standing example of the Italian villa design style. The house served as an influential prototype for one of the most common early American house plans, a central front tower attached to a rectangular structure, a style that has been widely translated through the work of other architects over the years. The design of the building, which occupies an entire block in downtown Greensboro, is not the only thing that earned it a spot on the National Registry of Historic Places. Blandwood was the home of Governor John Motley Moorhead from 1827 until his death in 1866. And then we have St. Joseph's AME Church in Durham, built in 1891. St. Joseph's African Methodist Episcopal Church symbolizes the resolve of Haiti, once one of the most prosperous African-American communities in the nation. In 1868, Edian Markham, an African-American missionary and formerly enslaved man, established a makeshift structure known as a brush arbor, where people sat on boxes and homemade stools to worship. Today, the brick building that eventually replaced the arbor is home to the Haiti Heritage Center. Just a tiny little picture here of the tower. Town Creek Indian Mound in Mount Gilead, 900 to 1400 A.D. Built by Native Americans of the P.D. culture, this earthen mound served as a setting for religious ceremonies, important discussions, and feasts. Many high-ranking members of the P.D. were buried at the mound. So you've got a field, a little bit rough here. It's uneven grass. And then you have what appears to be, if I can assume the other side looks the same, four ramped up sections that meet at the top in a flat area, and there's some sort of a building at the top, not necessarily in the center, but at the back of this flat area. Chinqua Pen Plantation in Reidsville was completed in 1925. Betsy and Thomas Jefferson Penn's 27-room stone and log mansion includes a series of exotic period rooms in Spanish, Italian Renaissance, English Jacobean, Pompeian, Chinese, and classical revival styles. Michael Braun's stone house, granite quarry, built 1766. Michael Braun was a German-born merchant, wheelwright, and farmer who also operated a print shop in Salisbury in the late 18th century. In 1760, he purchased 274 acres in Rowan County, and by 1766, he had built a large stone house, impressive in both size and appearance, with carefully shaped and matched stonework. The structure has now been restored and operates as a museum. Considered to be the oldest house in the county, the old stone house is also a symbol of German influence on North Carolina's history. There's a picture of the house here. It's a very small picture, a light-colored stone. It looks like stack stone from here. It's, as I say, it's small. It has a front entrance with a window to the left and two windows to the right on both the first and the second level. and there's some sort of an extension, which does not look like it's wood, built off to the right. Livingstone College Historic District in Salisbury was founded in 1882, founded by the African Methodist Episcopal Zion Church. Livingstone College, then Zion Wesley Institute, played a key early role in the education of black teachers, tradespeople, and clergy. Noteworthy individuals associated with the college include founder and first president Joseph Charles Price, called the world's orator, and selected by the Freeman during his lifetime as one of the 10 greatest Negroes living or dead. Educator and church leader William Harvey Goler and educator and missionary James E. K. Agri. Places of interest include the campus lawn, where the first intercollegiate black football game was played in 1892, the home of President Price, Moore's Chapel, and Carnegie Library. This is a very nice, classic college-style building, big wide steps leading up to a double white door with a transom on top and side windows and a little fancy stuff at the top and a little peak and some sort of like a bowl or I forget what you call it. When it looks like an upside-down acorn or something in the center there. Large window up above, looks like a bell tower at the very top. Rooms off to the both sides and a couple of dormer windows on each side also. We have the Shell Service Station in Winston-Salem, circa 1830s, located in the Wautown Bellevue Historic District. This giant concrete seashell, the one I mentioned earlier, is the last of its kind. Eight of the scallop shell-shaped fuel stations were built in the Winston-Salem area during the 1930s as part of a campaign to bring awareness to Shell oil. The Shell station at Sprague and Peachtree Street served motorists in the Wautown area until the 1950s, later housing a lawnmower repair business and then a regional office for Preservation North Carolina. Along with reflecting the growing importance of the automobile as a symbol of freedom in America, the Scallop Shell Station is significant as a surviving example of the literalism that defined the early 20th century advertising. Abbott's Creek Primitive Baptist Church Cemetery in High Point, circa 1793. With almost 450 decorative soapstone grave markers, this cemetery has the largest and finest collection of pierced-style headstones in Davidson County. Gravestones made by local stonecutters in the late 18th and early 19th centuries display symbols of resurrection and eternity and reflect the height of folk art in the community of Scots, Irish, and Anglo-German farmers. Formed by the Separatist or New Light Evangelical sect, Abbott's Creek is one of the oldest Baptist congregations in the Piedmont. The site includes the county's only example of a signed pierced-style stone. Now, this is interesting. I have never seen a pierced gravestone before. What that means is there is a section of it that's cut out. Remember, it's soapstone, so it's probably easier than granite. There's like a circle cut out in the center, but yet there's something fitted into it, sort of like a series of petals that are going around in a circle. And at the top, rather than just come around in a nice archway, there are also a lot of cutouts and little balls sticking into the cutouts, and there's like hanging balls on the side before it starts to get solid again, and a little moon shape cutout behind it. So very unusual to find hand-cut soapstone grave markers. Matsumoto House in Raleigh was completed in 1954. From the 1940s to the 60s, modernist architects recruited by Dean Henry Camp Hefner to teach at the New School of Design at North Carolina State College, now University, built a series of houses on what was then the outskirts of Raleigh. Faculty member George Matsumoto, whose designs are recognizable by their terrazzo floors, natural wood walls and ceilings, and mahogany cabinetry, began construction in his own home in 1952. The residence overlooks a wooded hillside and a small stream. A wide glazed window allows for plenty of natural light and integration with nature. Sort of an unusual structure. We would have, years ago, we would have called it modernistic. But you walk up a front walkway, it curves in, and then there's some stairs, and then it goes to a ramp, which goes across the lawn, up to a doorway, and on the left and the right, there's these big panels, maybe 10 feet by 10 feet, but no windows are visible, except at the very, very top. We're letting in light in just under the flat roof line. And then around the left side of the building, we can see there's a wall that has windows in the upper half. And this is tucked into the woods behind. Reynolds Building in Winston-Salem was built in 1929, one of the tallest buildings in North Carolina. The 22-story Reynolds Building opened in 1929. For more than 80 years, it served as the home office for the R.J. Reynolds Tobacco Company, which brought international recognition to the city. The skyscraper's Art Deco style inspired the design of the Empire State Building, which opened in 1931. The Reynolds Building now houses a luxury hotel, a restaurant, and apartments. And indeed, looking at this picture, you say, oh yeah, I can see how that inspired the Empire State Building in New York. George Black House and Brickyard in Winston-Salem, established in 1934. The son of a formerly enslaved man, George Black, rose to international acclaim for his traditional technique of molding bricks by hand long after the advent of machine molding. Black's bricks were used in Colonial Williamsburg and Old Salem restorations. And in the early 1970s, he was featured in TV's On the Road with Charles Kuralt series. As a result, the United States Agency for International Development asked Black to travel to Guyana to teach villagers how to make bricks, earning him special recognition from the governor and a visit to the White House. The George Black House and Brickyard was Black's home from 1934 until his death at age 101. And finally, I guess, we have the Walnut Cove Colored School in Walnut Grove, of course, built in 1921. The Walnut Cove Colored School operated until 1952 as one of many that were funded in part by Sears Roebuck and Company President Julius Rosenwald, who was approached by Booker T. Washington with the idea of building schools for black children. Rosenwald established a fund that, together with significant community contributions, led to the construction of almost 5,000 schools throughout the South. Today, this five-classroom building is one of the few Rosenwald schools still standing. So this is a solid white building. It's hard to say how high it is because it's got a very high roof and the windows are built up on the left side, and there's no double level windows here, but there's a lawn with an American flag flying in it, atop of it, out front. We've run out of time for today's episode of Our State Magazine. Hope you enjoyed it. You'll join us next time. I'm Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State Magazine was underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Our State Magazine is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org, and on iTunes. If you have any comments or questions, please call the studios, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.